Talktainment Radio Worldwide Sound. Talktainmentradio.com. We give you a reason to come. The world's greatest radio. We give you a reason to stay.
Radio, the way it should be heard.
You got the power.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Live call-in talk show, dial 1-877-932-9766 and join the conversation here on TalkTainmentRadio.com.
Talktainment Radio, worldwide sound. TalkTainmentRadio.com. We give you a reason to come. The world's greatest radio. We give you a reason to stay.
Radio, the way it should be heard.
You got the power.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
This is All in Our Family. I am S. Yolanda Robinson. We are all family. All in Our Family, heard exclusively on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. You're listening to All in Our Family, and I'm S. Yolanda Robinson, and this is radio the way it should be heard. Listening audience, I just love art. You know, when you go to the city, when you go into somebody's home, when you see the art, it just says something about the city, and it says something about the home. You know, what would we do without our artists? They're the soul of our community. And guess what I have in the audience, in the studio? I have Allison Barrett, who is with the Greater Columbus Arts Council. And when you come to Columbus, if you are participating in anything that's art, I bet you the Greater Columbus Arts Council has something to do with it. But Allison, how are you doing today?
I'm terrific. Thank you.
Thank you for coming into the studio today and to talk about some of the programs that you're doing. But Allison, I know what the Greater Columbus Arts Council is doing, but could you tell us who is the Columbus Greater Arts Council and what are you doing in our city?
The Greater Columbus Arts Council is a nonprofit. We're contracted by the city and receive some money also through the county. Mm-hmm. And our role is to support, advance, and promote the arts in Columbus. And we do that in a myriad of ways.
Oh,
but
yes.
We like to think we're kind of the linchpin in the middle of all the good work that's being happening in our community.
And that you are. I mean, if you go on the north side, the east side, the south side, the west side, guess who's going to be there? The Greater Columbus Arts Council. But, you know, how are you finding, how do you do all these magnificent things in our city?
Thank you. So, that's a great question. A lot of times people don't realize that we are funded primarily through the hotel motel lodging tax that is through the city. So people who stay at hotels, there's an additional tax that's on there. It goes back to the city, and that money is split between a couple different entities. Also, just this year in 2019, the county gave us a grant for the first time to fund art in Columbus. And then also, some of you may have heard that we have another public funding stream that we worked really hard to secure, and that is our arts and culture fee that is added to entertainment tickets.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you very much, everybody.
That's
for
right.
Making our city beautiful.
That is right.
Those of you who aren't in Columbus, and when you come to Columbus, check out the art in Columbus. We have a gamut of art things, art cultural things going on in our city. But, you know, can artists make a living? Can you make a living on being an artist?
Absolutely. We have several artists that is their full-time job, whether they be dancers or visual artists, painters who are painting and then maybe doing some art education with kids, some that just do full-time art all the time. The lower cost of living in Columbus absolutely makes it doable for most artists. We've seen artists move to Columbus from other cities like New York, Chicago, Boston, because of the cost of living and also because of the vibrant and supportive art scene here. You could feel a part of the family.
Oh, yes, because we got the Gallery Hub.
Yes.
And the Arts Festival in June. Mm-hmm. So we have a gamut of things going on in our city. But, you know, you have a... how does artists, I mean, I love it. I just love art. But how does it play? What kind of role does artists play for our community?
Oh my gosh. Well, art and artists are really the cultural fabric of any community. Uh-huh. One of the things that we talk about a lot is the economic driver that art is. Mm-hmm. Art is employing over 15,000 jobs in Columbus alone, millions of dollars of economic impact. So people come in, they might see a show, so they might go to a restaurant, eat, they'll get a hotel. So that is a big part of it too. But also, particularly, I like to think that artists are kind of our conscience. Yes. You know, artists' art has been used as a voice for all kinds of communities for generations. Yes. And we need artists to continue to push us to talk about what's happening around us, what's happening within us. Yeah. So it makes a difference in the quality of life and the human connection that we have in our community happens because of art.
Yeah, and it's just like they did in ancient times. In the future, our artists will tell our story, won't they?
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Now, does the community really support artists? I mean, do we here in our city, and do we really support our artists?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think primarily you'll see it happening through some of our arts organizations. Uh-huh. So you can't forget that embedded in every arts organization, there are artists. So the Columbus Symphony, the Ballet Met, et cetera. There are artists that are the focal point of those organizations. And so by going to that, you are supporting those artists. But separate from that, you know, the Gallery Hop is a great example.
Oh, yes.
But there are plenty of opportunities. For instance, at 400 West Rich, they have a First Fridays event where you can go to an open studio. You walk through all the different artists, visual artists, and see all their work. And they get phenomenal crowds for that. So there are definitely people who are either just enjoying or absolutely putting their money behind artists and art.
Okay, we talked about the Greater Columbus Arts Council.
Yes.
And their support with artists. What kind of support do you give to the artists?
So we have a couple different channels that through which we do funding. Mm-hmm. So first I'll talk about the organizational grants that we do. Mm-hmm. We have a grant that's for operating support. We also have grants that are called project support. And there are two tiers of that project support. Mm-hmm. That name, project support, could mean a one-time project or it could mean a season. Mm-hmm. So you might have a chamber music group and they have a season. They can come in for project support. Mm-hmm. Or it could be I'm an artist or a community leader and I have a great idea for a public opportunity to experience art. You could come in under the tier B for that. Mm-hmm. Separate from the organizational grants, we are one of the few arts agencies across the country that actually give grants to individual artists. We're very proud of that. There's only about 30% of local arts agencies that fund individual artists. So we have a host of ways, but we can continue to refine our process so we make it easier for artists that they're not spending all day filling out grant applications. So we have a grant that is called Support for Professional Artists, and it is to apply for funds that you need for whatever art you need to make your art, to create your art. So say if you're a musician, you might need studio time, or you know, people always think of paints and brushes, but we serve all artists. And the other part of that is marketing. How can we help you to raise your profile as an artist in our community? and help you get more audience members. And this year we're doing a new grant called Big Ideas, which is directed specifically to artists. So if you have a big idea for your community, you can come to us for to make a pitch. We'll have a pitch process where you kind of run your idea past us, and then you'll be invited to apply. But that project needs to be embedded in your in a neighborhood where the neighborhood is actually at the table with you, either making and or experiencing the art. So that's another way that we help.
That sounds different.
Yeah, we're excited about that. We're kind of thinking about it as an ecosystem. So you might come in for an individual artist grant for your personal art, how you can improve your career. But then the next step would be Big Ideas, where you're doing a little mini project, and hopefully you through this process you learn, and eventually you could come in the future for a smaller project support grant.
That sounds really interesting. Yeah. Neighborhood pride and the artists working along with them.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
Now, you've had some successes, I know, with some of our artists. Could you tell us about some of the successes that you've had here in Columbus, Ohio, with some of our artists?
With particular artists?
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's so many. Gosh, I don't know if I can name them all.
I thought you could do some name dropping.
Yeah, I think I can. Well, one is actually an organization that we like to work with, but they serve a lot of individual artists through their programming, who then turn around and come in and get grants from us. So that organization is called Maroon Arts Group. They're very grassroots, community-focused organization. They've served plenty of artists that have come in. And one that comes to mind is Caroline Bennett, who is a force in this community, by the way. And she just participated in the Martin Luther King Breakfast and does a lot of speaking engagements. She's a singer. She's a dancer. Jamal Brown, who's a dancer and choreographer. We've supported him. I'm trying to think of some others. Bands. We have a band application. So there are bands like, gosh, I'm going to draw a blank now. Cordial Sins is one that I think of. But you could come in as a band for a project. So there's plenty. And of course, we have our elders who have been served by either by grants or by time and attention from the people at the Greater Columbus Arts Council prior to my coming on board. And so, you know, Queen Brooks has been, she's received a grant from us. We work with Pepper and we worked with Kojo previously. So there's a long...
Kojo was like the Van Der Zees, you know, Van Der Zees from Harlem Renaissance. He was the Van Der Zees in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Now, have we been able to find anybody to replace him yet?
Well, I don't know that there is a replacing somebody of the spirit of Kojo, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are people who are still quietly working. I mean, I think of a Queen Brooks. Or even still Betty Stahl, who are still doing their quiet work. And they're helping to lift up the next generation of those leaders.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, we have an artist that we need to talk about because she was a MacArthur Fellow.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And
yes.
You talk about neighborhood pride, you know, in her work.
Yes.
It's all over. Her name is Amina Robinson. Could you tell us a little bit about Amina Robinson?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know I need to say much about Amina. I feel like everyone knows who she is.
Yes,
but yes, she absolutely was a MacArthur Fellow. She was, you know, grew up in Poindexter Village.
Yes.
She lived for the last several decades of her life in the Shepherd community and her house there. She was very, a very spiritual artist, I think, and just human, right? Anytime you talk to her, you felt this inner light in her, and somehow she was able to take that light and put it into her artwork. She used art as a way to tell stories and to stay true to the tradition of Sankofa, like telling the histories of our past so that it can inform the future. You see that a lot in her work. She was inventive. She used a lot of found objects. She made up her own material and called Hogmog. She just was a phenomenal artist, and her legacy continues in Columbus.
Yes.
Yes, and you can see her work if you go to the Columbus Public Library.
That's right.
I mean, when you come to Columbus, you'll see some of Amina all around the city.
Yes.
She has some of the students in the high school. They have sculptures of some of the work that she's talked about.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
At the hospital over there on Long Street. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And then, you know, Amina Robinson actually encouraged a lot of writers to look at Poindexter Village. You know, she loved Poindexter so much. You know, that you could see the community pride coming out in her work and everything that she did. And she also
Absolutely.
Talked about when President Roosevelt, and she has that. When, I mean, everybody was so happy when President Roosevelt came to Columbus, mm-hmm. and she shows that in her art and a lot of her work.
Yeah, that's the point. I think people always think of Amina as being just a visual artist, a sculptor, a painter.
Yeah. Yes.
But I think truly at the heart of it, she's a storyteller.
Yes.
And she did inspire a lot of people to tell their stories, those in Poindexter Village. And Poindexter Foundation is a perfect example of that format continuing.
Yes. So there's quite a few stories on Poindexter Village. And I have a book on Poindexter Village, too. That is awesome. Now, there's a fellowship. Could you tell us about the Amina Robinson Fellowship? I'm really excited about this. You know, her legacy lives on. She's going to be able to support other artists. But tell us about that.
We at the Arts Council are so excited about this. So we just launched this in December in partnership with the Columbus Museum of Art. So what not everyone knows is that Amina had a very close relationship with the museum, and so she left pretty much everything of her estate to the museum, including her house. And so first I will tell you, kudos to the museum staff. It has taken years for them to respectfully take things from her house and archive them and catalog them. And they will be doing an exhibit in this summer in 2020. But the bigger element is this house, what to do with it. So in partnership with the museum, the Columbus Museum of Art, GCAC will be doing an Amina Robinson Fellowship and also a residency.
Wow.
And I'd love to tell you a little more about it.
Okay, go on.
So the fellowship is specifically for artists, professional artists, mm-hmm. who are living in Franklin County, mm-hmm. and who identify as African American.
Oh.
And so the fellowship's a little bit different. So we ask for you to commit a 90-day commitment.
Uh-huh.
You will receive a $15,000 prize.
That's awesome.
It is. And that is unrestricted. That artist can do what they want with as part of that, we just ask that you will do three community outreach opportunities, and that will be dependent on what the artist's interest is, what the neighborhood wants to see happen. But that could be working with kids. It could be doing a talk to seniors. It could be a hands-on opportunity. So they'll be able to do that, and there'll be the opportunity for an exhibit, a public exhibit as well. And then the residency, which is really nationally focused, that's open to any professional visual art African American anywhere within the United States.
Anywhere within the United States.
Right.
Wow.
And that opportunity, they'd get to come and live in Amina's house and work in her studio and just kind of be amongst the spirit of Amina and have some dedicated time to just make art. So what we know about artists is that they're always hustling, right?
Yes.
They might have a couple jobs. Yes. They're trying to find time for art. This will give them a little bit of time to just really focus. And similarly, they'll have community outreach opportunities.
Now, is this just for the visual arts? And how can you, what do you define as a visual art?
Well, so.
What did the grant define as
Right.
Visual
so
art?
It is visual arts. And in our guidelines, it'll be a little more specific with artistic terms of 2D and 3D. Essentially, it's visual is a tangible product. It's not dance. It's not literary.
Uh-huh.
So it could be sculpture. It could be painting. It could be
photography.
It It tends to not be photography. Okay. I mean, yes, that is visual arts, yes. But in this case, we're looking for something that might match a little bit more of the
Amina.
It doesn't have to look like Amina's, but we really want that storytelling element and the cultural traditions to be in there. If you have that in photography, certainly apply.
Wow. Yeah. Now, do you have to have a degree in art to do that? You have to have a PhD in art in order to apply, or what defines you as an artist?
Yeah, so absolutely not. You do not have to have a degree. There are many, many artists who are self-taught, artists who have gone through school but never got their degree.
Yeah.
Truly, for us, we define a professional artist as someone who has an independent body of work. Uh-huh. So you're making art that you're selling, that you're being commissioned to make, or that you're exhibiting. That is what we consider professional. So not a hobbyist who's just doing watercolors on the weekend for themselves. Really somebody who's part of your livelihood is dependent on this creation and distribution of art. But you don't have to have a degree. There are plenty. Because what we know is that artists' brains see the world so much differently and so much clearly than all of us. So they just use their talents and make it happen. There are plenty who have degrees, too.
Wow. Well, and you said, now, when will they be funded? And how long? You said one of them's for 90 days. The residency, how long is that? And when do these projects start?
Sure. The residency is also for 90 days. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you the deadline for the fellowship, which is the local focus. That is on February 3rd.
Wow, that's and not too far.
Not too far away.
Okay, get those applications in, y'all.
That's right. And then for the fellowship, it is March 6th. So, and then there will be a time of review and, you know, we'll contract with you. And then the fellowship will happen, will begin in March. The residency wouldn't start until August, and then go through the summer into the fall for that 90 days.
Okay, so the residency is for 90 days also.
Yes, they're both 90 days.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, with the residency, the same as the fellowship? Can they? Are there any requirements that they do while they're in the residency?
Too? Yeah, the only requirements are those three community outreach opportunities.
Uh-huh.
And also we'll have lots of, you know, we do a residency with artists that come in from Germany as part of a Dresden Sister City partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is they want to do more than what the minimum commitment is.
Yeah.
They want to be engaged in the community. And so obviously we have you must do the mandatory three outreach opportunities, but boy, if you have other ideas while you're in the residency, we will help to facilitate that. We spend a lot of time taking artists to events, introducing to community leaders and other artists so that their experience is the best.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of people applying. What do you do if you don't get, I mean, do you have other programs for people, say, if you apply and you don't get selected?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some other programs that you have that the artist can apply for also?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people, don't get discouraged.
Yes.
You know, it's a matter of what strikes the jurors and what fits with the eligibility for the fellowship and the residency.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't selected this time, there's always next year, as they say in the sports world. But we also, as we indicated, we do have other grant programs. The Support for Professional Artists, the Big Ideas, which is a project that's artist specific. And also we'll be relaunching our fellowship programs this year. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about this, but those will be open to, we'll be trying to reach and represent more disciplines of art and hold those every other year. So there's always opportunities. And what I would say is just stay close to GCAC and to find out what's coming up.
Yes, because they're the ones. Those are the ones that you need. If you're artists and you're aspiring artists, and they will actually help you, you know. So you don't want to just sit in your home and do the artwork and get commissions. You want to connect with the Greater Columbus Arts Council.
That's right.
So that they can help you, you know, get into a bigger audience and also get more involved, you know, meet more people in the community.
That's right. Yeah. That's the thing that's one of the benefits of living in Columbus, Ohio, right? We have this Midwestern community feeling. Yeah. What part of our job is not just giving grants, it's helping to connect you to resources you might need, yes. whether that be an arts organization or other artists. And also we're going to be starting to do more frequent kind of networking events, which we're calling mixers. Uh-huh. We've done some large ones in the past 2 years where we'd had a couple hundred people. Here uh-huh. we're going to do them more frequently, smaller groups, so that, and truly our staff's whole work during these events is to introduce people to each other. So if you tell me, oh, I'd love to meet somebody from XYZ organization or gallery, and someone from there walks in, mm-hmm. we make that connection.
Wow. So they can call you and say, hey, I don't know these people. Can That's you right. help me?
That's right.
Isn't that awesome?
Yes.
where else can you find this as an artist? So that is awesome. Now, you have a lot of programs coming up. That festival is phenomenal.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit more about some of the programs that you have coming.
Oh my gosh. Well, the Columbus Arts Festival is produced by the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Uh-huh. We're always quick to point out that we do not receive any city or county funding for that arts festival. So every year we start at zero and have to raise that money through uh-huh. sponsorships, through the vendor prices, etc. Uh-huh. We just had the jury selection this past weekend, which is, uh-huh. I'd encourage next year, if you see news about it, to join. It's open to the public. Uh-huh. There are esteemed jurors who are selected to represent many different disciplines of art and parts of the community, and you get to see the massive number of applications that come in, mm-hmm. And the hard work that they have to do in choosing. So our festival is juried. So a jury selects the artists who get to participate as vendors uh-huh. in the arts festival.
And what do you receive by being at the festival as an artist? What kinds of things?
Well,
you
sell your work.
You'll be able to sell your work.
You sell your work,
oh,
right.
Wow.
And it's
a large audience.
Yeah, so, we just were listed on a list by an organization called Art Fair, and we're in the top 10 of community arts festivals. Now, keep in mind, we get 500,000 people through that weekend come to our arts festival.
Yes.
And in addition to the vendors who sell literally millions of dollars at the festival, mm-hmm. we also highlight lots of local art. Mm-hmm. We have the big local art tent where if you're a local artist, mm-hmm. And you don't need to be juried into that, mm-hmm. that's in a separate section. We mm-hmm. do plenty of performing art on the stage. We have a literary tent and spoken word tent. Mm-hmm. So you'll get to see, I think that our festival team has done a great job in making the connection local. We'll have local food vendors and beverages, etc. And
wow.
we pray for sun.
Yes.
Yeah, but I can't encourage you enough. It's free to everyone to come, and you get to meet people from all over the country who are exhibiting their art at the festival.
It is so wonderful. You know, and what's so wonderful about the Greater Columbus Arts Council and your support of the artists, we have so much talent right in our own backyard, you know, mm-hmm. and people think that they have to go, you know, maybe to New York or Chicago, which you do have good talent, but you can get it right here in Columbus, you know, and get very, very good talent.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow. So how can they get more information about you? How can they get in contact with you? What is that?
First thing I would suggest is to go to our website. It is gcac.org.
Uh-huh.
Stands for Greater Columbus Arts Council.org, gcac.org. Mm-hmm. Go on there and read. We have all of our grant guidelines listed there, so you can see what opportunities we have. That you could see what the eligibility is. See, uh-huh. make sure that you're eligible. Uh-huh. We have our workshops. We do plenty of grant workshops and on occasion topical workshops on some business of art. There's information about the arts festival there. Also, our annual event called the Community Arts Partnership Award that happens in the fall. Uh-huh. So I would say start there. Uh-huh. And then if you have questions, uh-huh. you can always come to a grant workshop. Uh-huh. You can always reach out to grants@gcac.org.
Oh my gosh, this is so wonderful. You got to contact the Greater Columbus Arts Council.
Yes.
And come to Columbus. We got it going on in the arts. So you have to see that for yourself. I'm talking about it, but you have to actually see it. But it's time to go, you know. But I'm going to see you next week. You've been listening to All in Our Family, and I'll see you next week. Love you. Thank you, Allison. I forgot to say, for coming on All in Our Family. It's been a wonderful show. Thank you so much, and the Greater Columbus Arts Council.
For the best home fragrance and beauty products, shop Ash Kickin online.
That's
A-S-H-K-I-C-K-I-N. Made with 100% natural quality ingredients and handcrafted with your family in mind, Ash Kickin products are better than those other guys. Ash Kickin candles, incense, body butter, face moisturizer, and hair moisturizer are priced just right, and you can get yours at 10% off with coupon code TALK17. Support this 100% Black-owned business and get your home and body smelling and feeling all right.
That's
A-S-H-K-I-C-K-I-N. Shop Ash Kickin online at www.ashkickin.com.
Think you can't afford life insurance? Think again. You might be surprised at how affordable it can be. 80% of Americans overestimate the cost of life insurance. Maybe it's time to swap a few small expenses for some big peace of mind. Life insurance can protect what matters most, and it's the right thing to do. Let's talk today. So call me, Marvin Smith, at American Family Insurance at 614-986-3105. You can also visit my website at marvinsmithinsurance.com. American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin, 53783.
Sex Code War by Kahari Inaharo, the author of the Essence Magazine bestseller Race Code War, is releasing his second book, Sex Code War. Be on the lookout for Sex Code War.
My name is Al Edmondson. I'm a business owner and community organizer. I want to encourage you to visit the King Lincoln District. Our community. It's a great place to live, work, and worship. Catch a show at the Lincoln Theater. Enjoy smooth jazz at the King Arts Complex. Enjoy great food and visit our historical churches and newly remodeled homes. Live, work, and worship the King Lincoln District.
Our government doesn't seem to care that 9 million children have no health insurance, even though every dollar spent immunizing children against illness saves more than $16 in medical costs to make them better. Doesn't anyone see? We're wasting money and allowing children to get sick.
I am Susie Flynn. A vote for me is a vote for the 9 million uninsured children.
Humpty Dumpty got stoned on a wall. Lost his balance and had a great fall. All of his doctors and all his sad friends couldn't put Humpty together again.
Do you know what your kids know about drugs? Need help? Get help. Visit our website at drugfree.org. A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
9 million uninsured children need a solution now. For more information, go to electsusie.com.
I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 33. With not one day off since. The JDRF has my back, funding research toward a cure, prevention, and treatments that really help the millions like me to have a better life. The scientists funded by JDRF test themselves every day so that someday I won't have to. Join us. Your help is our hope. JDRF, improving lives, curing type 1 diabetes.
At TalkTainmentRadio.com, we don't just talk. We don't just entertain. We've combined talk radio with the latest in online entertainment, with the ability to listen live at no cost 24/7. We are the premier online radio station. Outperforming the digital quality of our competitors, our shows are produced in a state-of-the-art studio by the best radio professionals in the business.
hosting live shows on location at some of the area's greatest and most popular events, we give you exactly what you want to hear with talk radio that matters to you. Join us online at talktainmentradio.com, where you can listen live or play podcasts from the best shows in online talk radio. We give you a reason to come. We give you a reason to stay. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard.
We must build and bond our family.
We've got the power.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. You're listening to All in Our Family, and I'm S. Yolanda Robinson, and this is radio the way it should be heard. You know, listening audience, there is some controversy over should you spy on your babysitter and your nanny. And I have on the show today Florence Romano, and she is called the Windy City Nanny, and she's on the line. Florence, how you doing?
Hi, how are you? Your energy is just amazing.
You know what? I probably had about 3 cups of coffee today.
You know what? I don't even believe you. I think you're just naturally this way. You're just delightful and aesthetic always.
Well, thank you so much, Florence. You know, I've seen you on the internet, and I want people to know a little bit about you. And how did you get started doing shows about and got called? How did you get started getting called the Windy City Nanny?
Oh, goodness. Oh, a tale as old as time. Okay, so I was a nanny for 15 years. And,
wow.
I know. I saw a lot and loved it. And after I retired from being a nanny, I wrote a book called Nanny and Me to help children understand the transition of being cared for by their parents to being cared for by a nanny or a caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started talking about child care in the new millennium and how different it is raising children today and how different families look and what the dynamics are. And I've always loved children from a young age, so it was kind of a natural progression in my life. And then I was kind of nicknamed the Windy City Nanny because I hail from Chicago. So it seems like a pretty good fit.
Well, that is the Windy City.
There you go. Exactly.
You know, and for those that don't know, what is a nanny?
So a nanny today is defined so differently than before.
Mm-hmm.
A nanny used to be in people's minds. It was the Upper East Side of New York.
Yes.
The very rich and famous.
Yes.
Now a nanny is really anyone that's taking care of your child in your absence. That is all it is. So you could call them a babysitter. It could be grandma. It could be whomever it is helping you, but nanny is really kind of a blanket term for that now.
Oh, and you know, what? People are looking at using cameras on nannies today? You said things have changed since a long time ago. Why are people choosing to put cameras on their child care providers?
Well, you know what? I think today we're hearing more than ever in the news about the abuse that goes on in homes through child care. And, you know, you see on the news that there are Down syndrome or special needs children that the nanny is abusing in some way. And the only way they would have caught that is with the nanny cam. But you also have to remember that a nanny cam is also there to protect the nanny. It's to protect all parties involved. If there's an accident with the child and the nanny says it was a total accident, this is what happened. If they can go back to that footage, the parents go back to that footage, and they can corroborate that story and say, yeah, it was right. It was a freak accident. And nanny did nothing wrong. There was no negligence. So today I think it's more necessary than ever to trust but verify. And the way to do that is through a nanny cam.
But, I mean,
They put it all over the house? Do you have any privacy at all?
You do. There are laws attached to it. Now, whether or not people pay attention to those laws or are law-abiding, that's the story. We see that in the news, too, about where there are nanny cams where they're not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But no, every state has different rules attached to nanny cams. For example, where I live in Illinois, nanny cams are 100% legal. You can use them in a court of law. You don't have to have the nanny sign off on them being videotaped by a nanny cam. The only thing you have to get consent for in Illinois is the audio part of the nanny cam. So you really have to look up wherever you're from what the laws are in your state.
Do you have to tell, are they hidden, or you have to, is it required that you tell the nanny that they're being recorded?
Depending on the state you live in, it may not be required. Like, Illinois is not a state that it's required for you to get consent, only for the audio portion of it. So it depends on where you live. But nanny cams, oh goodness me, they are so discreet. You would have no idea where they are. They're hidden so well. They're so teeny tiny. So no, you would probably not even notice where it's hidden.
Oh, my gosh. I can see good parts, and particularly in the climate that we're living in today, where children are being snatched and possibly abused. I can see some good parts. But I can see some things with the nanny, maybe that feel like they're not being trusted.
Right.
Wow.
And if a nanny doesn't feel comfortable looking for a household that divulges that information, that does make it known that they do have a nanny cam and that they are going to be recorded, if the family does tell you that during the interview process and you don't agree, you don't feel comfortable, then that's not the family you should be working for, because the family has the right to do that, and you also have the right to.
So, are they watching constantly at the recording, or they look at it afterwards?
There's other families where, they don't look at it till the end of the day. And so it's really what your comfortability level is with it. And there's so much technology today in the way of nanny cams and what they allow for you to be able to see and how you access it in, nighttime, daytime, things like that. It could be based on, if you walk in the room, the nanny cam all of a sudden, pops on when they notice that there's activity. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways technology is enhancing this for us today.
Mm-hmm. What do you do? If I had a nanny cam and I saw something that I didn't like, how do I approach the nanny if I, that I just don't agree with? How do I approach the nanny with that?
It's going to depend on what it is that you find on that nanny cam. Now, let's pretend there's two different kind of, polar situations here. Mm-hmm. The lesser being, you see maybe that the nanny's just giving them a little too many sweets, a little too much candy. Mm-hmm. Now, that would be me. I would have been that nanny caught on that nanny cam, given overindulging those children. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness gracious, I was totally that nanny. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's a situation where you could go to the nanny and say, hey, maybe, I didn't talk about this enough in the beginning, but I really want to, talk about kind of the routine of the home and, their dietary restrictions, things like that. There's a way to have that conversation with a little bit of sugar and not be attacking them if you really love that nanny and you want to clarify the rules of the home. Mm-hmm. Then let's take it to the other, like the extreme end.
Yeah.
It's the abuse. It's the abuse happening. Uh-huh. There is not a situation in my mind where you would ever give that nanny another chance. You go right in and fire that nanny.
Yes. Right. So it does protect the children.
Absolutely. And
protect the nanny too when they get, like you said, if they get falsely accused or you think that something, if the child may have fallen and have abuse and they think that maybe the nanny abused the child, you can look on the camera and see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
exactly.
My goodness. Yeah.
Protect all parties, but especially for those, that can't advocate for themselves, infants, even if they don't have special needs, if they're typical children, they can't speak, so how do you make sure that there's not abuse going on with your newborn, and then if you do have special needs children that have no communication skills, have no language, how do you make sure that there's no abuse because they can't advocate for themselves? So remember what that nanny cam is for. It's not just because you're snooping. Mm-hmm. It's because you are trying to protect.
Now,
Did you ever have a camera on you while you were
while I was a nanny?
While you were a nanny?
You know, if I did, I was never told. And if I did, I guess I did everything up to snuff because I was never confronted. But I also was a nanny during a time where that technology was not as utilized. I put myself in the shoes of nannies today, and I understand that it might feel a little weird to know that you are being watched. And my rule of thumb for all nannies is you need to behave as if there is a camera on you at all times, no matter what, even if there is or there isn't, that's how you should behave.
And on the other side, I was reading on the internet where somebody had actually watched a nanny change.
Yeah,
was watching her change her clothes, and you know that's a violation. Yes. You know,
it is.
Yeah. So,
those are the violations with nanny cams that we have to be aware of, and about you protecting yourself, and then also making sure that you're being defensible of yourself in those situations. Just making sure that if you think in any way, shape, or form you might be being recorded, making sure you're protecting yourself as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And if there is a situation like that, then obviously you need to leave that home. That's not the home for you.
What can the camera catch that the nanny commit? What kinds of things that the camera can catch that the nanny would miss?
The nanny, depending on what it is that you're seeing in terms of behavior, I think a very special part of having a nanny cam is you're able to see your children's reactions to the nanny. Mm-hmm. And children have really great intuition. They have really great sixth sense, and they're unfiltered in the worst of times, so you might as well use their unfiltered and uncensored nature to help you kind of navigate this nanny. And I feel that if you're able to see the behavior of your children interacting with that nanny, their energy, their happiness or their struggles or whatever it might be, that's gonna catch things that you would never see. The nanny's never gonna report exactly how the child is behaving, other than just probably generalities. They wouldn't know how maybe the child feels about them, but you on a nanny cam may be able to pick up on your child's behavior with that nanny.
Because you know your child.
Yeah,
you would know how your child would be responding and everything. Yeah, that would, yes, okay. So, I understand that there's a new app that's called the Stroller Patrol. Do you put the camera in the stroller too?
It's an app now. Yes, it's linked to the camera and the stroller, and you can see anything that's happening there. You know, there's been a lot of turbulence and a lot of conversation about the idea that technology is abused and people are always on their phones. And it's a great way to be able to check and see how engaged that nanny is with your child when they're out and about. Mm-hmm. And also, anything predatory that also may be happening. It also helps you in terms of location and, where they're going. And so again, more safety issues involved in why you would have a camera attached to your stroller as well.
Oh, wow. And then there's another one. Is it the nanny shaming post or?
Well, the nanny shaming one. I like to actually talk about nanny shaming in a different context. I think today in our world, there is so much diversity and, in terms of families, but also a great divide when it comes to people who have nannies and people that don't. And I think that when you look at shaming, I like to take it out of the context of technology and actually talk about how moms and dads and nannies and everyone feel about each other. And I think there's a lot of mudslinging going on both sides of the fence where the moms who stay home don't understand why, if you're going to have kids, you're not taking care of them yourself. And then the vice versa of, the ones that are working, look at those moms who stay home and think, why aren't you providing for your child? So I think the shaming about moms and the shaming about dads and the shaming about nannies, I think all of that has led to technology evolving in a lot of different ways. But I also think that there's an emotional factor attached to the shaming.
Wow. Yeah, I guess if people were putting you down all the time, it would be some kind of emotional factor.
Right.
You down and you feel guilty. Most moms, I remember when I had my son and I had to go to work and everything, I felt so
so bad because I had to leave him, you know. But he's, you know, I had my mom watching him for a while. But, you know, it was just like I said, oh, you know, well, I wanted to be there, and then I couldn't be there. So, you know, I can understand that shaming. people saying, you know, asking you about, you know, you're going to work, and your son is asking you, Mom, why you got to go to work?
Right.
Why do you have to work? Now, you know, you talked about nannies. Are they, and it's not just for wealthy people. Because when I did this show and I was telling people I'm doing this show, they said, well, that's for the rich people. That's not. And I know people that are just struggling. They take their child to somebody so that they can go to work, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's true. And, you know, yes, that needs to be redefined about what it is to be a nanny today. You know, that Scarlett Johansson movie, The Nanny Diaries, with Mr. and Mrs. X, and wealthy and all that. It's not what it is today. You know, the statistic is over 64% of families in America today have a nanny.
Yeah.
Over 64%. And that is a growing statistic. So we're not looking at something that's trendy. Mm-hmm. We're looking at a cultural movement. This is part of our society. And, you know, we really need to be more supportive of each other because childcare is expensive. And to your point, you had your mother. Mm-hmm. And thank God for your mother. And you gave your son a really great gift about having to bond with his grandmother. Mm-hmm. That's something I know about. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, but I grew up in an old-fashioned Italian family. And my parents lived with us. And so they took care of us all the time, and it was a beautiful lesson in passion and all sorts of other things living with my grandparents. And so you have to see what the benefits are of letting love into your home in that way and growing that village and asking for help and the different role models that you will be able to surround your child with. So it's nothing to be shameful about. It's just really a beautiful thing if you can make it that way.
If you can, and if you can't, you'd have to look at other resources. So and more and more, I read somewhere, Florence, where a lot of people, there's more women in the workforce now than ever. You know,
yes, ma'am.
And so they have to have some kind of support as they are into the workforce going.
Right. And whether or not it's because they have to work or want to work, it does not matter.
Yes.
You are allowed to make the choices for yourself. And if you want children, you also want to work, go right ahead.
Yes.
You can decide for your, this is 2020.
Uh-huh.
You can do whatever you want to do, girl. And that's fine.
Yeah, it's not, we are in the 2020s. We're not in the early 1900s anymore.
Right?
Get with the program, everybody.
Right. It's a different world. And it's a better world. And there are other ways that we're still trying to catch up to where we want to be, but that's okay. That's life. It's evolution. It's seasons of things happening. But no, you know, I just think everyone, you know, needs to support each other better about the choices that they're making for their family.
Yes, we certainly do. The whole community needs to be more supportive of our moms, you know, and our dads, but, you know, the ones that have to go to work and raise a family, too. But, you know, there's another thing that I need to ask you before we close. And this has been something that I see a lot of, should child care workers or people who watch children, should they have a dress code? Is there a certain way that they should dress? Yes.
Some people, I think, need a dress code for just their everyday life.
I know about that.
Yes, I think it's absolutely appropriate for a family to, you know, have a dress code for their caretaker. I'm not saying that this family should ask you to be in a string bikini. That's a no. But, you know, remember, you are working with children. You should be appropriately dressed to work with children, run around with them, be on the floor, and all that sort of thing that you need to do. And if the dress code you feel is inappropriate in some way that a family's trying to institute, then again, you don't work for that family. That's not the place for you.
Yes.
But yes, I think appropriate dress is appropriate.
I used to work at Head Start, and our director, if she thought that you were not appropriately dressed, she would send you home because she said, you're not going to be dressed like that in front of my babies.
Well, there you go. More power to her. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she wanted like you to have he wanted you to have specific clothes. You couldn't wear them short yes. mini dresses or anything,
absolutely
you know,
not.
around this the children.
Not
you know,
the place for that.
That was not the place. You take that and do it somewhere else. But you're in front of our children, and we want to make a nice impression on our children. And then you want to be comfortable. As you because when you're working with children, you're not just sitting at a desk, you know.
No.
you're working close with them and right side by side, you know.
Right.
So I can see a dress code. I can definitely see a dress code. And you know, there's another question that I wanted to ask you about transitioning. You know, and that's the hardest thing for children. You know, when they have a new, you know, your mom has to go to work and you're going to have a new sitter, or I'm going to have to run to go from my sitter to kindergarten, or just making that transition. And then everybody's wondering why the child is acting up and they haven't actually got to transition, you know. New teachers, they don't like the, you know, they're used to routines. But how do you help a child transition into a new nanny? What's your suggestions?
Well, it depends on the age of the child. If you're working with a newborn, you know, that's going to be a very different scenario. They're just kind of going to have to be cool with whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you have a child that's older, you know, they're, you know, toddler age, maybe three or so, you know, in my book, Nanny and Me, I talk about all the different scenarios with families. And sometimes it's dads to go to work. Sometimes it's mom. Sometimes it's both, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you explain that? A book like mine is a great visual tool for children to use to explain why this transition is happening. But most importantly, you want to make sure your children know that it's not anything they did wrong. It's almost like talking about, you know, a child of divorce. It's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. We love you. You know, you want to make sure you're reinforcing that idea that this transition and this person that's going to come in and take care of them, You're gonna create this amazing world from, oh my gosh, they're gonna love you, they're gonna have fun with you, you're gonna make memories, it's gonna be amazing, it's gonna be awesome. You wanna talk it up.
Yes.
Make it seem like it's just the coolest thing ever. And you know, they're loved by so many people. So that's always my advice, is make sure that you're making that child feel so, so super duper loved, and also talk it up and make sure that you're bringing a person into their world that is going to put the emphasis on them, about making things fun and teaching lessons and keeping them safe and all of those good things, and being a role model. If you can really amp up all of those things and be excited for your child and he's dying inside over this transition because it's hurting you, put on that happy face for that child and show them that this is going to be a wonderful experience.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes. But don't sit there and not do anything, because if you that transition and not do anything, you know, tell that story, help them prepare for that transition. When I was with Head Start, I had we're working with a child that was having a difficult time. You know why he was having a difficult time? Because the bus driver was no longer there. And he was so used to seeing that bus driver.
Yeah.
And he wanted to know, what happened to my bus driver?
Yeah. That was part of his routine. That was part of his comfort.
I
understand, you know, and kids do get attached to routine and seeing, you know, maybe faces on a consistent basis. And that makes them feel safe. That makes them feel secure. And so it's good that you got to the bottom of what that was. But every child probably has a trigger point where they feel like they feel out of control. So it's trying to make your children in a situation where they do feel out of control, maybe in this transition, feel like they're going to have some control, feel like they're going to be a part of this transition, a part of the vetting process, maybe even of that nanny. Include them in that so they feel more in control of their environment.
I almost called you Wendy. But Wendy City. Hey, Could you tell us? I'm really excited about your book because I know it's going to help. Could you give us the name of your book again?
And sure. It's called Nanny and Me, and you can get it on my website, WindyCityNanny.com, or you can get it in any major bookstore. Get it right on Amazon. I hear you can get it next day or even same day, something crazy. And I hear from many people that it makes a very good baby shower gift. When you, instead of giving a card with the gift, you give them the book and you write a little note inside the book to the baby to be. Lots of different ways you can utilize that book in your life, for the people in your life or for yourself. But you can go right to my website, WindyCityNanny.com, and purchase it.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds real good. And I'm so thank you for putting that out because that certainly was a need. That was so wonderful. Get in touch with the Windy City Nanny. She can help you all of you that have children. You know, you need to talk to her. But thank you. Thank you, Florence, for being on this week's program of All in Our Family. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
I'll see you next week. Love you.
Got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.